Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, Ladarius Robinson here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
I'm doing well, gents. How you doing this morning?
We are great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Charles, a lot to get to with you here on the show today. I want to start with the Bruce Arians situation. What do you make of the timing of him stepping down from the head coaching job, and what do you make of Todd Bowles taking over now as head coach of the Bucs?
Well, I mean, I think the timing is I don't know. I'm buying into the reality that he and Tom weren't in the greatest of shape between the two of them. And, you know, I think if you look at the sequence of events that happened from, you know, Tom retiring to, you know, the Todd Bowles lawsuit being filed, all the stuff that kind of percolated about, you know, hey, is Miami trying to get, you know, figure out a way to get Tom Brady on their roster? Is Sean Payton in play for them? You know, and that whole thing getting blown up by the Brian Flores lawsuit, and then all of a sudden, you know, hey, maybe Tom wants to come back, but he, you know, meets with the Glazers in London at a Manchester United game, you know, comes back into the fold. Bruce retires a couple weeks later, apparently with Tom having no issue with it whatsoever. And, you know, I just think there was a lot of smoke there, and it's hard for me to believe that, you know, Bruce Arians, who right up until that point of retiring had sure given signals that he was all in to, you know, come back and coach in 2022. I think he even told, you know, NFL Network, I'll coach until I can't. And, you know, that was in January. So it's just, I don't know. I think that there was frustration there on Tom's part, you know, in terms of he and Byron Leftwich putting things together offensively for that team, and, you know, how much Bruce was maybe weighing in late in the process. And, you know, I think that weighed on, I think how the Antonio Brown thing went down weighed on it. And I really truly believe that, you know, it was Tom's wish that Bruce, you know, step aside. Now, Todd Bowles getting the head coaching job, I think Bruce's fingerprints, there's no doubt in my mind that his fingerprints are on that. You know, Todd and Bruce have been close for a really long time. They worked together previously. You know, Todd probably got a little bit of a raw deal with the Jets, considering what we know now about the front office there and how things were falling apart. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it moves forward. But make no mistake, it's a team that Tom and Byron Leftwich are running that offense now in Tampa. Like, Todd Bowles isn't going to weigh in on that. That's their baby now. And, you know, Todd's going to handle things defensively. So, in a weird way, I mean, I would just say that, you know, Tom kind of got what he wanted in terms of the offense being streamlined between he and the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, my initial instinct, Charles, was that this was like a, Bruce, yeah, can you get upstairs and here we'll give you this, like, fake title job, and is that okay? And he accepted it, but I'm looking at Brady sitting in the first row of that presser, and I'm like, why is he going through all this trouble? I mean, I suppose it's just you could look at it like damage control, and you just don't want people to believe that you knifed a coach in the back and just run the plays. I don't know. I tended to believe it a bit more after I heard it, all of that.
If he doesn't show, right, what's the damage? I mean, then everybody's like, well, look, you know, Tom didn't even show up to this thing. Like, the only move was for Tom to show up at that press conference. Okay, so let's just be clear about that, because for him not to show completely sends the opposite message of, you know, what they're trying to convey. And then Bruce is like selling this idea of, yeah, you know, Tom coming back was the key to me retiring, but not in the way you think. I wanted Todd to have Tom as his head coach, or I wanted Todd to have Tom as his quarterback. I just, you know, it's just crazy to me. You know, 2 weeks into free agency, no, there's just too much stuff. And again, if Bruce had stepped aside as soon as Tom unretired again, what happens? You immediately connect the two. You know, I think they tried to space it out as long as they realistically could. And people still, you know, it was clear that there had been friction. It's clear that this thing smells funny. And by the way, Bruce just signed a contract extension like a year ago, okay? And he's going to continue to, from what I was told by a source in the organization, his payout does not change. He's going to continue to full. He's going to earn what he signed in that contract extension, which means he goes into this sort of nebulous front office job where we don't even know what Bruce is really even going to do or if he's going to be in the building. And he's going to continue to earn a coaching contract, which might actually be more than what Todd Bowles is making as the head coach. Like, I just, come on. He automatically goes into the ring, you know, their ring of honor and, you know, all this stuff. There were way too many things that happened during the course of last season, especially down the stretch, for this to be the you know, happy marriage that they want people to believe it was. And again, Tom had no, he comes back and he has no problem with Bruce stepping aside, right? There was no like, geez, you know, I wish he really wasn't going. It was just like, hey, thanks, bud. Thumbs up from the front row.
I like you a lot on my Instagram story.
right. You know, I'm telling you, like, especially after Tom retired, somebody brought up the Antonio Brown incident to me that knows Tom really well and was like, look, he'll probably never admit it, but, you know, Antonio Brown, that whole thing happening with Tom out on the field and Tom having, like, no ability to affect that whatsoever was not a great moment. And later, like, Clyde Christensen, I think we might even talk about this on the show, came, like, it was near the Super Bowl. Clyde Christensen, the quarterback's coach of the Bucs, comes out and he says, you know, he gets asked on a podcast about it, and he says, like, the timing was the really unfortunate part. And I'm paraphrasing him here, but he comes out and he basically says, like, hey, if this had happened between series, maybe, you know, there's, like, a different outcome there. And I think what he was telegraphing was, like, you know what, Tom would have been on the sideline. And then it's not Bruce, who has a temper that runs hot, and, you know, Antonio Brown, who's, you know, prone to making poor judgments, snap judgments. Maybe it's not these two guys, you know, going at it. Maybe there's Tom either calming Bruce down or calming Antonio Brown down, and things change. But instead, Mike Evans checks in the huddle. Is like, hey, man, it's blowing up on the sideline. Brady looks up, and Antonio Brown's doing jumping jacks in the end zone, and that's that. So, you know, that's just one thing. But there's, like, you know, there's just a number of things that I think played into this. You know, they'll move on, and whenever the next book that's written about Tom Brady comes out, I'm sure they'll delve into some of the struggles that were going on between him and Bruce Arians.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Charles, what do you think of Bobby Wagner joining the Rams, and what do you make of the offseason as a whole so far for the defending Super Bowl champions?
It's a big addition for them. I know. Look, I know they had Von Miller, but to me this is more of the functional spine of your defense linebacker that they've lacked for a really long time. I mean, now again, Bobby Wagner wasn't playing in 2021. He wasn't on his typical level. You know, he wasn't he's still a tackling machine, but he looked like he was slowing down a little bit there. But you know, I think he's going to be a guy who steps on the field rejuvenated for them. They needed that, you know, type of defender in the middle of the defense. Really smart dude. Like, just, I mean, there's a reason why he was an all-pro year after year after year for the longest of time. And, you know, I think when you talk to people inside the Seattle organization about, you know, like, hey, who is the bedrock kind of leader on that defense when they were at their height, it was always Wagner. And so I think that's just such a huge piece to bring to them mentally. You know, the Rams, the fact that he stays in the division, extremely motivated guy. I mean, he's very upset about how things went down with Seattle and not really being told by the organization, having to find it out, you know, through other avenues first. So, you know, I think for the Rams, it's interesting because, you know, they've figured out how to manipulate the cap and move money around. But what it really speaks to, if you're an NFL fan, is that they have an owner who's like, yeah, let's just go. I have no problem having hundreds of millions of dollars in escrow in any given year in terms of the guaranteed salary. So, like, if fans don't understand how this works, if you sign a player, their signing bonus, you pay that out up front, but any other guaranteed money in the contract has to go into escrow. So it's there for the player. The owner, you know, owners can't default on it later. You can't promise all kinds of money and not deliver it. You have to be able to put that money into escrow. If you have an owner that's willing to put $200, $300, $400 million into escrow moving forward, you're going to have a significant advantage over a number of NFL teams that just don't have owners who are sitting there going, yeah, sure, I could $250 million, you know, in escrow every single year. That's no issue for me. Most franchises have problems, but, you know, clearly Stan Kroenke, if he can move a team, cut a near $1 billion check to the city of St. Louis, build an insane stadium, I mean, that guy's got more money than he knows what to do with, and he's clearly willing to use it.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, most owners of this league don't have the depth of those pockets. Well, no. Speaking of that's
liquidity, Joe. I mean, like, isn't that crazy? Like, to think that he has that kind of liquidity to sit there and go, yeah, I can actually have $250 million almost every single year locked up into guarantees. You guys figure out how to move the money around with the cap. I'll take care of the cash aspect. I mean, that's just I know NFL owners are rich. Very few of them have literally $250 million in liquid funds at any given moment.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, so Buffalo, its stadium, they got it all figured out. They've got the new stadium coming, and this is coming up real fast here in Nashville. Just wondering what you thought about that, Charles, the Buffalo stadium deal, and you know, I guess what you think about what's going on here. There's still a lot to figure out here. There are talks about the Adams family becoming more liquid to put a big chunk in, but there's still some money that, you know, of course, has not been exactly accounted for yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's all going to come down to, you know, public versus private funding, like how much are the owners going to pump in versus how much is, you know, are private citizens willing to pass and pay for. I mean, that's in Buffalo, I think it's still remarkable that you have owners who can go to the community and say, hey, you know, $500, $600, $700 million, you know, help us, you know, chip in to build the stadium. And, again, we talk about liquidity. I mean, there's, you know, these owners can probably finance. I would tend to say all of these owners, most of them have enough equity in their team that they could finance the stadium themselves and pay it off, but they don't want to do that. They want the cities to kick in. They want the fan bases to kick in and get as much money out of the municipalities as possible. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to, you know, see how it goes, but ultimately comes down to how much, you know, pain is the fan base willing to incur financially in terms of, you know, taxes and, you know, foot the bill for it. That's in Buffalo. Clearly they were willing to do it, but, you know, it's, I still think in some ways the league and the owners operate from this old world mentality where they're like, well, yeah, of course, you know, if we're going to build a new stadium, either you're going to build it and you're going to rent it to us for nothing, or, you know, you're going to basically, we're going to build it and own it, but you're going to pay for a portion of it too. Just as sort of an agreement that we have between, you know, myself as an owner and as an NFL team and staying here, and you're going to pay, you know, your portion of it. That's not going to have anything to do with game day. So, you know, I don't know what this, I think it comes down to the fans. The fans want to pay for it and they're willing to go that route. You know, if citizens are open to that, that's fine. I think if they don't, I also think that's fine. I think nowadays most NFL owners, as I said, have enough equity built into the price of their franchise that most of them can fund their own stadiums and pay it off like, hey, like the rest of us do when we finance a major purchase in our lives, like a home. It only enhances the value of their franchise. It's weird to me that we're still sort of like, sure, communities totally should help foot the bill there, even though, you know, communities often foot the bill in a lot of other ways with franchises.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock. Charles, great stuff as always. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, fellas.
Absolutely. Charles Robinson, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Seltzer Land is turning Nashville into a hard seltzer paradise on Saturday, April 30th at Riverside Golf Links. You can enjoy this one-of-a-kind immersive experience as you spend the day tasting over 100 unique hard seltzers, indulge in mouth-watering munchies, tons of seltzer swag, and bust out the gram for the most Insta-worthy moments of the day. Seltzer Land has rounded up the best hard seltzer brands in the land for one epic day dedicated to the bubbly brew everyone can't get enough of. Go to thegamenashville.com/contest to enter for your chance to win tickets to Seltzerland. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Dentry. We're live from First Horizon Park today, home opener for the Nashville Sounds, opening day in general for the Sounds as they take on the Durham Bulls coming up tonight at 6:35. Gates open at 5:30. A little bit of rain right now, but the forecast looks like that rain could move out by the end of the day. So come on out tonight for opening day at First Horizon Park. Six-game homestand for the Sounds to begin play here on the home portion of their schedule. And I've said it many times, you can come watch me throw out a first pitch on Sunday as well. You can heckle me. That's fine.
What's your
call me a cheater.
What's your velo? What's your velo going to be?
I'm going to try to put it somewhere between 52 and 61.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hey, if I can break 60 at this point, I'm cool with that.
Last year I did one of those pitching machines. And it said 74, which I was pretty proud of.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
And then my arm hurt for about a week after that. But I was pretty proud of that. So
Rex Road, we got to get you out there. Robbie's done it. I've done it.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Maybe boomers aren't invited.
Hey,
I'm not
you
a
said
boomer,
it,
by the
me.
Way. I'm not a boomer.
You said it. You said it.
Yeah, I know. I'm a boomer in relative terms here. Like, compared to people who are on the six, I'm a boomer.
That is true. I got a texter that says, I'm a fan of Charles Robinson's reporting, but anytime I hear someone referred to $250 million as, quote, a quarter of a billion dollars, it infuriates me. $250 million is closer to zero than a billion. $250 million is already a lot. Why inflate it so much more than it is?
Huh? What?
Well, it is a quarter of a billion dollars.
Right. Like $250,000.
One quarter of a billion.
Yeah, $250,000 is a quarter of a million. It's pretty common.
I get what he's saying. You can just go $250 million and it's a lot of money, but that does not change the fact that it is a quarter of a billion dollars.
Yeah, I mean, like if you're talking about a dollar, like it's a hundredth of $100. I guess that would be a little bit dumb. But, yeah, it's kind of common phrasing, isn't it?
I guess.
I thought it was.
By the way, Diana Russini from ESPN putting this out there a few minutes ago says, quote, the Tennessee Titans are not shopping or taking calls on wide receiver A.J. Brown, per sources. General Manager John Robinson made it clear at the owners' meeting that they are currently working towards keeping Brown a Titan for the long term. I'm told this has not changed. This coming from Diana Russini from ESPN.
That's fine, and it's worth putting a tweet out there, but no one has claimed that they are.
Right.
You know? Now, I get it, though. If you have someone who covers the Jets who is putting it out there that they're interested in it, and also is putting and kind of distinguishing between the Titans and Seahawks and saying, like, you know, the Seahawks are saying, no, not open for business. I guess I can see how people could start to wonder. A.J. Brown put out a tweet, he's sick of it. But no one has actually said the Titans are talking to anybody or are open to trading A.J. Brown.
Correct. We did have a texter on the text line earlier that says he's kind of starting to buy into Jared. Like, if the Jets offered the Titans two first-round picks, and you've got to do it if you're the Titans. And my response is, why? Why do you have to do it if it's two first-round picks?
No, I don't think – I think, like, two first-rounders and two second-rounders or something like that, I think it would be more – I think it would take more than two first-round picks, personally, for me to give up someone I know is a very good and on the cusp of great young football player.
I mean, everybody's in love with picks. Everybody's always in love with picks.
Right.
That's great. But give me the known commodity. I'll take that. That'd be awesome. I mean, we talked about this with Charles one time. Like, obviously, the Rams are an extreme example here because they treat draft picks like they just don't even matter for the most part. But, like, think about what they've done. You brought in Jalen Ramsey. You gave up a first-round pick in order to do it. Like, would you rather take your chances with a first-round pick, or would you rather say, yeah, we know what this guy is, we're going to get him? I mean, it's not going to work for everybody, and that's not going to be the strategy, like, for everybody moving forward, but everybody's way too in love with the picks sometimes in the NFL.
Right, and, you know, this is where Corey Curtis had something about how many draft picks are still left from John Robinson's tenure. It's not a ton, but you know, this is like the flip side of people who say, well, I don't want any picks because John Robinson's had a couple bad drafts. Okay, well, I mean, that's dumb. You know, he's your GM. You got to count on him to be able to make picks. But if you want to go through first-round picks, so let's go through them real quick. Jack Conklin, Corey Davis, Adoree Jackson, Rashawn Evans, Jeffrey Simmons, Isaiah Wilson, Caleb Farley. We don't know what's going to happen with Farley, but, I mean, look at that hit rate. You know, and then, granted, Isaiah Wilson's an extreme case, but, look, the overall hit rate is not especially high. I mean, you've got – out of there, you've got one great player. I think you had a really good player in Conklin. And you had one great player, and frankly, everybody else on there would be considered disappointing relative to where they went in the draft. So, now, how does that compare to the average in the NFL? I'm not sure. It's probably not that far off. You know, for John Robinson's sake, he's done a lot better in other rounds. But the bottom line is, that's why you don't say, oh, yeah, give me those picks when you have a great football. It's so hard to find someone like that, and he found A.J. Brown the second round. So you keep that player, you pay that player.
Which I think the Titans will do. I mean, that's right. Obviously their intent at the moment. And there's still plenty of time this offseason to get that done. And then you've got your wide receiver one for the foreseeable future if you're the Titans. And you don't have to worry about that part of it. Now, Robert Woods is in there now. Maybe there's a wide receiver in the draft that you love. And you're set at wide receiver for the next little bit here if you're the Titans. If, you know, you're in love with Treylon Burks and he's there at 26. But you know, just because there are picks that are offered doesn't always mean that's the way to go.
No.
Sometimes you just hold on to your good football players.
Yeah, I think this is one of those cases where that was kind of a clear choice unless the Jets were just going to be silly with it. And the Jets have that potential.
They could. Who knows? Jason from Mount Juliet saying another first-rounder for A.J. would be great, but you have to turn it around and draft another receiver to replace him. That's an unknown quantity. That is exactly correct. So. Right.
And the chances that you're going to, you know, there's going to be a receiver or two out of this draft, maybe more than that, who are going to be really good players in the league. But it's going to be a bunch of them who aren't as good as their where they go in the draft. It's just the reality of football. So, it's hard to find guys as good as A.J. Brown.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds as they take on the Minnesota Wild tonight at Bridgestone Arena. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
VIP. Let's kick it.
And it is that time of the week to bring in our good friend Chris Mason, former Preds goalie, current Preds TV analyst, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Chris Mason. C. Mace, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
What's up, guys?
We're doing well. Appreciate you taking time to be with us today. So, C. Mace, obviously a gigantic game tonight for the Predators as they take on the red-hot Minnesota Wild. What do you think of the Predators and where their game is at the moment? Obviously a tough one on Friday against Buffalo. You know, they've had some inconsistency in their game as of late. Overall, where are they right now, and what do they need to work on the most, in your opinion, as they come down the stretch here?
Well, to me, I think, you know, one of the biggest, I would say, characteristics or strengths of their, you know, they've been talking about identity all season long, has been defensive play. And I think, to me, that's the thing lately that's been probably the most inconsistent. And I know they have, you know, they're dealing with some injuries on the back end, but it's not necessarily the defensemen, it's the team defensive play. And I feel when they were, and when they did have things in order, that they were a hard team to play against. You know, obviously we talked about their physicality. They can be one of the most physical, imposing teams in the league when they're playing that game. But I just feel defensively, for me, it's just not there right now. And if this team is going to have any chance of, you getting into the, let alone getting into the playoffs, but making any noise in the playoffs, the defensive side of things has to come around, and it is, it's not great right now. And I don't care, you know, when you talk about, well, they finish here, they're going to play the Avalanche, they're going to play Calgary, whoever. Well, if they get past, you know, St. Louis or play at Minnesota, it doesn't matter who you play. If you don't have that side of your game in order, you have no chance in the playoffs. And I feel the way that they were playing, you know, earlier in the season, attacked defensively, and they were one-goal games, and Saros was great, and the guys were, you know, you're getting, you know, scoring up and down. You can beat anybody. When you, you know, you do score more, power play is good, let's keep that going. But when you, you know, start kind of cheating a little more to the offensive side of things, it's a flip of the coin. And when you play some of those top teams, if you end up, you're not going to beat a team like that in the first round. So I think defensively is, to me, is the major, major glaring issue.
So, Chris, do you think that this has had an adverse effect on Saros? And I don't mean just in terms of, like, the numbers and all that. Those are done. But just in terms of his mindset, his play.
Absolutely. I know as a goaltender, when you are on a team, when you're on a team that defends well, when you have a rush coming at you or an end zone situation, you can anticipate the type of shot you're going to get. So it increases your chances, you know, of making that save, and your decision making is limited because you don't have as many options on the table, as opposed to, you know, a team that gives up a lot of east-west plays. There's a lot of turnover, broken down plays in zone, off the rush, odd man rushes. There's more options available for the offensive attacking team. So as a goaltender, instead of only having, okay, well, I know this is a 90% chance I'm going to get this shot, opposed to, well, it's a 50-50. This guy could shoot it or he could pass it because there's a guy driving down the back door and they have a trailer come in. It's a 3-on-2. So now there's 3 or 4 options that you potentially have to deal with. And it 1,000% affects, you know, goaltender's play because there's just more options and a lot more high-danger scoring chances given up. So there's no question. And, you know, you can go through stretches, long stretches. The elite guys like Saros can go 20, 30 games and they can cover that up. But eventually it's gonna get you. It's just impossible to keep playing at a 93 save percentage level when you're giving up that many high dangers. So, to your point, long-winded answer, yes, it does affect the goaltender. Piece of Saros is playing.
Press TV analyst Chris Mason on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And C-May's kind of building on that. I mean, we've talked about, you know, when things were going good for the Predators this year, when things have been going poorly for the Predators this year, one consistent part of it has been they've been among the most penalized teams in the NHL. How much, as a penalty killer, whether it's goaltending or just the PK guys that are out there, how much does the cumulative effect of that maybe take you out of your game as the season wears along? And are you seeing any of that right now from the Predators?
I honestly feel they've been a little bit better in that regard. You know, I know there was a major issue, you know, I don't know, about a month ago. I feel they're getting a little bit better on the discipline side of things, but it's definitely, you know, they've had some games recently where that has crept in. They take the 5 penalties in the first period. You know, not only does it tax your penalty killers, and, you know, with the shortage on defense, you have to kill Roman Josi now, so he's out there blocking shots and playing those types of minutes that are going to wear you down. But you also take your best players out of the game. You take Forsberg doesn't kill. Johansson might go out at the end to win a draw. Duchesne doesn't kill. You know, you got all these guys that don't kill sitting on the bench, you know, for long stretches of time. So it's impossible for them to get up to their top level when they're sitting on the bench for long stretches. And then the guys that are killing, you know, you're taxing these guys, and they're out there playing hard minutes and blocking shots, potential injuries. And, you know, you talk about having, you know, gas left at the end of the game in the tank. You know, it's just not a recipe for success, obviously. So that's something that you can't go into, you know, a series or down the stretch here right now. And let's say it's one goal here, one goal there that you don't get or they give up. You just, the margin for error right now is so small. And with the Preds' schedule, some of the power plays that they're going to be facing, they have to limit other teams' opportunities. I don't care who you're facing, but, you know, some of the competition that they're going to be dealing with, you can't give them any, you know, any advantage, any freebies, I guess, for opportunities to bury him. And so you want your best guys on the ice. And you take Forsberg and Duchesne and guys like that to have that line completely out of it for long stretches of period. That's just, you know, that just doesn't add up to giving yourself the best chance. So that's something I do feel they've done a better job of. I know there's been a couple games recently where it's crept back in, but I think they're kind of on the right path in that regard. But that it's not getting here lately.
See, Mace, how good is Minnesota? And you know, one guy we've talked about earlier in particular, I mean, Ryan Hartman, for anybody who, you know, remembers him well here, I'm a bit stunned to see what he's doing up there. How good is this team, especially now with the, you know, upgraded goalie?
Well, I think they're legit. And, you know, they also address some of the physicality. I think, you know, when you look at this team, you know, a month ago, you know, there's no DeLore, there's no Middleton. They have Hartman. They've got some guys that'll play gritty, but nothing that'll kind of scare you in terms of an overall team toughness standpoint. But now they've addressed those elements. I thought those were great additions for the Wild. And then you have, you know, Talbot coming back, and he's playing, you know, some unbelievable hockey. And then you have Marc-Andre Fleury there. Their goaltending is now at the strength of their team, which was a question mark for a big part of the year. Was costing them games. I think they're a legit, you know, contending team now. You know, you can put them up there with, you know, with the Calgarys and the Colorados and the St. Louis's. St. Louis has faltered a little bit lately, but they definitely have the makeup, I think, for success.
See, Mace, last thing for you here. As you look at kind of the stretch that the Predators are in here, the schedule is about to get really tough, even though you've got nine of your final 14 games at home here at Bridgestone Arena. How important is it, maybe even results aside, obviously we know that's important, but how important is it right now if you're John Hines and the Predators to get back to that playoff style of hockey, to get back to your identity that makes you successful? Because I feel like the last couple of weeks, that's gotten away from them a little bit.
Yeah, my take on their schedule, I honestly think it benefits this Preds team because for whatever reason, I've found too on teams that I've played, when you're kind of a fringe playoff team or in the middle of the pack, when you play those lesser teams in the standings, that it's kind of, for whatever reason, it's a mental challenge to really get up for those games. And I believe teams that are in the middle of the pack, you have to have some sort of fear factor, and I believe that this team thrives on that. So they raise their level when they play the stiffer competition, opposed to dropping down to the lower level or the perceived lower level of the teams lower than you in the standings. So I think that mentality, you know, has to be every single game. We say that, and I know it's easier said than done because the challenges of that for the mental preparation. And even though you say all the right things and you quotation prepare for it mentally, It's just not the same. So I feel when they go up against the Minnesota, St. Louis, Calgary, Tampa, Florida, Colorado, all the teams that they have left on the schedule, you do have that fear factor. And you know that if you don't bring your best game, that you don't really have much of a chance to win that game. So all the details are in shape. The preparation, you know, 1-2 days before leading up to that game is in check. Everything's on point when you're in the meetings. You know, your attention span, you're paying attention to every single detail because you know that could be the difference to winning a hockey game. So I feel getting back to the team that was that relentless forechecking, back-checking, you know, reloading, getting above the puck, neutral zone play, defense, or shutting down, offensive or off the other team's offensive plays and having that support. Every single detail is in check when you play those stronger teams. So I really actually feel that their schedule benefits them more than if they had a lesson.
Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, is our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joins us every Tuesday morning at 9:30. Brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. See, Mace, great stuff as always, brother. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning.
Thanks, boys. Great chat as always.
Absolutely. Chris Mason joins us every Tuesday morning at 9:30. We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. 1025. Join ESPN 1025 The Game for the Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament benefiting Folds of Honor coming up on May 16th at Hermitage Golf Course. You can put your team together and come play with other athletes, musicians, and other local celebrities as well. Sign up at thegamenashville.com/golf. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley and Joe Rex Road here live at First Horizon Park. Michelle Knezovic live at our Hillside Medical Game Studios on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Opening day here for the Nashville Sounds. They're out there working on the field as we speak. We had some rain this morning. The field tarp is on the field, covered it up nicely, and now they're out there drying some things off as well. So it could be wet throughout the day today, but looks like the weather should be good tonight as the Sounds host the Durham Bulls for opening day. 6:35 is first pitch. Gates open at 5:30 here at First Horizon Park. It's Tito's Tail Wagon Tuesday, which means you can bring your favorite four-legged friend to First Horizon Park. Tickets start at $30, $25 for humans, $5 for dogs as well. Tito's Tail Wagon Tuesday. I like that, Joe Rextra. That's good stuff.
Proceeds from all dog tickets will benefit
Agape Animal.
Agape Animal Rescue. Limit one dog per human. Also, pregame block party right here on Junior Gillian Way. The opening day festivities start with a free block party, 4 to 6, live music, activities for kids, food trucks, beverages, all that stuff's going to be a heck of a party over here today. And the weather will get better.
And they've got, you know, giveaways that they've got throughout the week here. Today, I mean, you're talking about Fox 17 giving the first 1,000 fans a schedule clean giveaway presented by Fox 17 News. And then, of course, you've got the clear fanny pack giveaway coming up on April the 9th for the first 1,000 fans as well. I can always use a good fanny pack.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's very boomerish for me. I need a new fanny pack.
I'm sure you do.
Actually, they're back in style, Jeff.
I know they are. They're coming back. Everything's coming back now. The fanny packs are coming back. The bell-bottom jeans are coming back, and the mullets are coming back as well.
Are you serious about the bell-bottoms?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I have a pair of bell-bottom jeans.
Yep.
Well, I know that there have been sort of like trendy women's jeans bell-bottoms. That's been for a while, right?
Yep.
But when you say bell-bottoms come back, I'm talking about like everybody walking around with a huge...
Well, that wouldn't go everybody yet, but
we're getting
I've seen
there.
Them. Yeah.
Okay, that's exciting.
Joe, did
I
wear
actually have more faith in society now. What's that?
Did you wear bell bottoms?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was a little kid.
Really?
I mean, my mommy dressed me, and she did absolutely put me in some bell bottoms. There are some very incriminating pictures.
I think
pictures.
We need pictures.
Well, that's kind of amazing. Like, you know, back when Joe was a young lad in the roaring 20s, like the suits
yeah,
that he
right.
wore around the top hat. It was good stuff back then, too.
Yeah, we were actually way ahead of time with the bell bottoms back then. You know, people were like, "What the heck are you doing? Why aren't you in like your tweed little suit like most people in the 20s?" It was weird.
Deborah on YouTube says this was the most knowledgeable comments on the AJ Brown situation that she's heard today. So we are knowledgeable on AJ Brown.
Really? Did we say anything? What? Thank you. What did we say? Just like, it's dumb.
It's just more of the, yeah, that's really dumb, and it's going to take more than a couple of picks to get me to get rid of A.J. Brown.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's right. Yeah, we had some good comments. I mean, yeah, again, like, so Gentry tweeted, you know, kind of the same thing we were talking about. Like, there shouldn't be a reason for, like, a report on this, because there was never a report that anything was happening. The report was just that the Jets were praying someone would, you know, the Jets had A.J. Brown's, like, Insta posts on their hope chest, you know. But there was never any report that the Titans were actually engaged in anything. But this is how it goes. Sometimes one side wants something, something comes out, and then you feel compelled to check with the other side. So Diana Rossini puts it out that the Titans are not interested in in doing this. So there you go. I never really thought. Again, my whole thing is with John Robinson or any GM. Yeah, phone lines are open.
Yeah,
you want to give me you know, a bunch of picks and first rounders and half your franchise and send Corey Davis back and take on all of his salary. Great.
Yeah, we'll talk. But I don't expect there to be. Who knows? Maybe we'll see another piece from Rich Amini here in the next couple of days from the Jets. All right, Rich, really? We're really trying to get in there with A.J. Brown. But until then, I think the A.J. Brown is still, for the foreseeable future, going to be a Titan. Big game tonight for the Nashville Predators as they take on the Wild. So it's a big one. I mean, we've talked about this throughout the show. You heard C-Mace in the last segment. They've got to get back to playing their brand of hockey. I think they've gotten away from that the last couple of weeks. And I know it's been mixed results. I mean, they won a couple of games last week against Philly and Ottawa where I didn't think they played particularly well, and they won in those games anyway. And I think as they go down the stretch here, I think there are a lot of people that do subscribe to what C-Mace threw out there in the last segment of, you know what, maybe the schedule coming down the stretch against the quality of teams that they're playing, maybe that's ultimately a good thing, and maybe that kind of forces you to get into playoff mode quickly. Maybe it does. We'll have to wait and see. But I can tell you this, like if the Predators are playing, if they continue to play the way they've played the last couple of weeks, they're not going to like the results most of these nights coming up the next few weeks here as the schedule gets tougher.
Yeah, and I hear what C-Mace is saying. I mean, you know, it's just like the situation should give you enough urgency, you know, regardless of opponent. I mean, in theory, the better opponent makes it more difficult to win, and they are also playing for something. But I understand there is a different dynamic when you're playing a team that's, you know, like the Buffalo Sabres have a packed house and they have like a special ceremony night and they're acting like they won something of significance when they beat you. It's just weird. You know, there's no pressure on them, but they're trying to have a feeling like they actually are relevant in hockey for a night, you know, having a special magical night at your expense. And Buffalo has been beating some other good teams lately too, but got to beat Ottawa this week. That's for sure. And then you got to win tonight or against Florida.
Yeah, if you win two out of the next three, I still think you're going to be in a pretty good spot. Now, two out of the next three is a pretty tall order when you're talking about Minnesota at 9-0-1 their last 10. And then, oh, by the way, there's the Florida Panthers team that you've already beaten once this year but have been really, really good for most of the season. And now Bobrovsky back in net for them as well, too. So the challenge is right there in front of you this week if you're the Predators. Wayne on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, one thing I've noticed concerning Saros the last few weeks is his struggle with his glove. Too many rebounds given up as a result of bobbles and misses with the glove. Pay attention to this tonight. I will. I will pay attention to this tonight, Wayne.
We will look for that. You know, Florida, right there now with Colorado for the President's Trophy.
Yeah.
Is Colorado trying to, like, pass that off to somebody else? Saying, hey, somebody take it. Somebody else take it.
Could be. I mean, Carolina's right there in the mix for it, too. A couple of points, I think 4 points behind Florida at this point. So it's going to be interesting coming down the stretch. I mean, Carolina won it last year, and it wasn't really all that close. But, hey, there's a lot of really good teams out there. Florida's one of them.
Yeah.
And, by the way, now they have Claude Giroux on their team, and you did not have to play against them last time if you're the Predators. It was a tough game. You won. Big save Dave coming up huge, and now they've just added, you know, Claude Giroux.
Yeah, sure. Casual edition of Claude Giroux. It's going to be – I mean, I'm already getting excited when I look at some of these possible playoff matchups.
The Cup playoffs this year are going to be awesome.
Yes.
They're going to be great. I mean, the East is pretty much already set in terms of the teams that are going to be in there. There's some still kind of fluctuating of the order it could be, but, like, I think the Islanders
are
the first
team out. It's a
clear eight. Like, the Islanders are the first team out, and I think they're, like, 11 points back.
Yeah, they are. They're 11 points back of the Caps, so that's a clear eight and a much muddier picture in the West. You know, Vegas is right there, but you got three games in hand on them. Yeah. Dallas is right there. It's going to be a race.
Big game tonight for the Predators. We'll be back in the morning to discuss all of it. Big game tonight for the Sounds as well. Opening day here at First Horizon Park. Come on out to the ballpark tonight and check it out. Going to be a fun night here in downtown Nashville. That does it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Darren, Donick, and Chase coming up next live from Bridgestone Arena. This is ESPN 102.5, The Game.